It's every parent's worst nightmare to lose a child. That goes without saying. But imagine believing that the perpetrator who has violently assaulted and all but tried to kill your child previously has been let out of prison on bail and you haven't been informed. Then imagine that that same individual goes ahead and murders your child. How would you feel? Well, that's exactly what Lauren Johansson's family are having to deal with right now, after the justice system allowed their daughter's abusive boyfriend to get out of jail and to go on to murder her in a deadly attack. This is the horrific case of the preventable and absolutely despicable murder of Lauren Johansson. I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Let's talk about Bryson Rivers. And like I said, if you were looking at this young man before you see the mugshot, clearly no one on the whole is going to look good in a mugshot. But when you do the due diligence on this young man and you look at his social media and you read about who he is through the eyes of others who know him, it is really hard to conceive that we are talking about what we're going to talk about today. Because to all intents and purposes, this is a young man who stood out for all the right reasons. This is a young man who should be doing really well in society, maybe even living the American dream. It's as simple as that. And yet we're talking about a case that is so catastrophic and cataclysmic for the families involved that it just blindsides you. Because like I said, when you look at Bryson Rivers, when you hear about Bryson Rivers, you cannot imagine that we're going to be talking about the reality of his future, which is going to be one based inside and incarcerated a prison in the United States. Now, his social media, it claims on there that he's a US Marine Corps veteran. He was from Saucier, Mississippi. I would say that when you go on his social media, he seems very family orientated, also quite religious, I would say as well. But when he's talking about his family online, I genuinely think it comes from an authentic place. So in 2018, he talks about one of the happiest days of his life being when his baby sister was born. And he's actually present there with his three brothers and his father. And there seems to be a lot of communication between himself and his mother in particular. And she clearly idolizes him and is hugely proud of who he's growing into. He's a gifted athlete throughout school, and I mean really gifted. He seems very popular, he's good looking, he's got all the traits and gifts that one would imagine is gonna set you in good stead for life. Because let's be honest, whilst looks don't actually mean very much in the long term, the truth is that there is this mindset where if it looks good, it must be good. And part of that is to do with very early on in our development, environmentally and on an evolution level, we have to make very quick decisions over what feels safe and what does not safe. And if somebody is smiling and attractive versus somebody who's growling and looking nasty and is unattractive potentially by society's standards, the chances are you're going to think that going with the person smiling and being nice is probably the best decision, even if that doesn't ultimately work out correctly. They're the snap decisions that evolutionarily we do. Same as if you see a bruised apple and it doesn't look too appetizing, even though the reality is it's organically grown and really good for you, often you'll go for the really beautiful, bright red one that just looks so shiny and delicious. And you don't consider all the hydroponics going into it and all of the pesticides going into it and the fact that it's probably got some wax making it all shiny. You just think, hey, that looks nicer. That's probably good for me. That's the kind of snap decisions that we make. So as much as people want to say we shouldn't judge a book by its cover, we're actually hardwired to some degree to do that. And that means that when we see somebody who seems to fit this idealized standard of beauty or this idealized standard of popularity, we believe that that must make them a good person. And it's really hard when you look back on this young man and see who he could have grown into. Because, like I said, gifted athlete, seemed brilliantly engaged at school. In 2018, he ranked second in the state for 200 meter sprint, fourth in long jump, fourth for 100 meter sprint, and third for 400 meter running. So essentially, we're talking about somebody who's really effective. He's also engaged in American football and does really well there. So he's excelling on every level. Apparently, he was quite academically bright as well. He apparently went to St. Patrick's Catholic High School, and there are some mentions of different colleges, but at least from the early days in high school to pretty much when he leaves, he is excelling and everyone is going to be looking at him and thinking this guy is going to be somebody in this world. And of course, he is going to be somebody in this world, just not quite what anybody would have anticipated. And like I said, the reason I'm introducing that at this point is because I think that people very often struggle to see people who conventionally look like they will be successful falling and failing so badly. And what that does is it introduces a lot of people to a set of biases, which is that, well, why did he become A, B or C? What did she do to provoke A, B and C? And that's a very dangerous conversation that I see things are happening online that are playing out, in fact. I see that people online are looking for reasons why he has actually murdered Lauren Johansson. So I want to explore that a little bit in this video as well, because it is so dangerous when people do that. In fact, recently I've just done a video on a TikTok killer, and that TikTok killer basically came in, saw his ex because they'd broken up, shot both her and the guy that she was hanging out with innocently, and people are online basically saying, yeah, she deserved to die because at the end of the day she was cheating on him. No, she wasn't. And even if she had, with 150 different guys, she wouldn't deserve to be executed that way. So I think we have to have those difficult conversations when we're talking about domestic abuse. And like I said, the world is not safe for women, where people think it is ever acceptable for her to have done anything that means that she deserves to be murdered, because those conversations lead to other women finding themselves in very, very difficult situations where they are silenced because they feel that maybe their behaviour is causing the issues that they're facing. So with that said, let's talk about Lauren Johansson. She was 22. She was from Hattiesburg, Mississippi. She comes from a super close family. Her father is Lance Johansson. He's a respected orthopedic surgeon. So you can imagine that she's living a relatively middle-class life, a very loved life. She's thought of as quite brilliant by her family. She was studying at the University of Southern Mississippi and she wanted to become a nurse. So clearly the medical field is something that really matters in her world, in her life, in her family. It's something that she holds dear to. And she herself felt that if she became a nurse practitioner, she'd be able to take care of people. And actually one of her main vocations was that she wanted to one day develop an animal rescue center because she was a real animal lover. And that speaks to some very compassionate traits without a shadow of a doubt. But she's young, she's got a lot of life to live, a lot of decisions to make, a lot of mistakes to find out in her life. You know, that's what we go through and do as human beings. We are constantly developing and learning and growing, but she has these ideas of who she wants to become. And those ideas are very respectable and laudable. It's as simple as that. Her father actually said, my daughter was a genius. She was so smart and so wonderful, and she had a heart of gold. And he also talked about one of the issues that he's struggling with currently in the wake of her loss, because he's looking at Lauren and he's saying to himself, why did you end up in this abusive situation? Because that's very hard for a parent to conceive of, that their child can grow up in a loving home and end up at the hands of somebody who takes their life. He actually said Lauren grew up in a home where we never spanked her, we never hit anybody in the family, we just didn't believe in that. How she became a victim to a man that just beat her and beat her and beat her and beat her to death is just, my wife's at home crying about it right now. It's a direct quote that he's come out and talked about. And I think that we can all empathize and understand that questioning, I did everything right. She was so perfect. She had everything to live for. And yet, I'm talking about her in the past tense. And ultimately, that's what he's having to come to terms with right now. But that's why talking about domestic abuse is so powerfully important, because there are always more questions than answers. And one of the big confusions and points of contention when discussing this is that people look at the individual victim and think, why didn't you do A, B, or C? Why did you accept A, B, and C? And if only it were that simple. If only it were that simple that you could see somebody being nasty to a person and say, get out, and they leave, then it would solve everything for the most part. But that's not how it works in relationships. We've all been in relationships and accepted inappropriate behavior. I would say every single one of us. I'm not saying that that meant that our partner was abusive. I'm saying we've all been in situations, for the most part, I would say. Some of you will be very lucky. You'll have like an A1 individual who deserves a certification of being a great partner every single day. But for us mere mortals, myself included, I've said things and done things in the past that I'm not proud of. Yes, they're not abusive, but the point is they weren't nice. So My partner learned to accept that I have about him too. He's sometimes said and done things that aren't very nice, but minor in our relationship. But you weigh up the good times with the bad. And that's the spectrum where good love and bad love is. Psychologically, you weigh up the good, you weigh up the bad. And nobody's an abuser 100% of the time. People can be really nice 95% of the time. And you're buying into that part of them, not the 5% where they're dangerous towards you. Now, this couple, they're this very attractive young Mississippi couple, and they dated for on and off about 5 years. They met at high school, and Lauren's dad said one of the things that really struck him from the get-go was that he didn't find Rivers a good person. He didn't connect with him. He felt there was something about him that he just didn't connect with. And he actually expressed that to Lauren. He told her that. But he said, like any father, there are some things maybe I should have been more aggressive about. In hindsight, I respected her decision and let her know what I thought. So he did his best. As parents, it's really hard to imagine that anybody will meet the grade when it comes down to spending time with our children, because they are literally made of diamonds. It's as simple as that. So when somebody walks into their life, unless they are literally perfect, you can find fault. So the dad's probably sitting there and thinking, I don't really like him very much, but maybe I'm being too hard on him. Maybe I'm just thinking that she is the most important person in the world and no one's going to meet the grade. Maybe I just need to back off and let her live her life. And that's what he does. But his first instincts, that intuition that he feels, is right. He doesn't realize how right he is. That doesn't happen until December 2023 when it comes to surface that she has been horribly abused to the degree that she has been abused. But right from the get-go, he has got that father's instinct that something is just wrong about this guy. And taking it back to the social media, one of the things that I noticed when he's expressing how well he's doing in his sport, he also adds that he basically had had some kind of injury. In spite of that, he just succeeded in all these amazing ways. And that speaks to me of a lack of humility. Now, I appreciate, I come from the UK. And in the UK, if somebody says to you, oh, your dress looks nice, you kind of immediately go, oh, it was a bargain. I got it for like a third of the price. And actually, it was in a charity shop. That's the kind of way that we are in the UK. There's just this desire to play off any kind of compliments. It's not a good thing, by the way. I don't think that's psychologically positive, but I do know that culturally a lot of us relate to it. Now, the amazing thing about the US, and I do think it's amazing, is you get celebrated for your talents in the most wonderful of ways. And when American people see you succeed, they do really clap and applaud. And you don't need to play small. I don't think that they feel that it's necessary to do that. So understandably, there's a lot of requirement as a human being to understand that that can, if you are brilliant at something, lead to a little bit of arrogance and superiority unless you are tempered in that, unless you're grounded in that. But I do kind of feel that where he is concerned, even though people are just applauding him and saying how amazing he's done in his athletics, he just needs to add that comment, you know, well, I would have done better, I'd have probably been first kind of thing. And that speaks, like I said, to, I think, an arrogance and superiority within him. And that does give us an intuition that potentially the narcissism is being festered and fostered beneath the surface where this man is concerned. Now, like I said, they're in a relationship for 5 years on and off. That's quite a long time when you were only 22. And that's, of course, the reality for Lauren. She's spent a huge amount of her late teens and young adult life with him. It will not have been plain sailing. For the most part, we can all agree, when we are young people, we go through changes, transitions, we're learning our emotional vocabulary. Sometimes that can mean we act in ways that we wouldn't act in 15 years' time, and we are forgiven for that, because we're learning and growing. And so on both sides, I would imagine Rivers and Lauren at times are not their best, and at times are indeed their best. And we can, like I said, forgive them for having the changes and transitions that may at times hurt one another, because they are, as I said, growing to be and become the people that they will be and become in 15, 20 years' time. But without a shadow of a doubt, there is never an excuse to raise your hand to anyone in a relationship. And the truth is that Rivers has been doing that since early in their relationship. That's what seems to be coming out from the reports and the research that I've done. This has been a violent relationship since very early on, and it culminates on the 7th of December 2023. At this point, they are both on vacation together. They've gone to the Music City in Nashville, and during that vacation, they basically visited the first art museum on Broadway and Top Golf near the Cumberland River. So they've obviously gone away to have a nice time together. And like I said, it's really important that we remember that. Lauren has not gone away with a monster. She's gone away with a boyfriend who is capable of monstrous things and has indeed, in the past, clearly been monstrous towards her. But let's remember it from Lauren's perspective. Even though this man has been reprehensible, in my opinion, towards her on prior occasions, she also will have had great times with him, like doing what I'm talking about right now. And it's so key, because people often judge victims who stay without understanding that victims stay because they don't feel like a victim most of the time. They feel like a partner. They only feel like a victim at certain times. They only feel scared at certain times. And it's just because, like I said, I think it's really unhelpful when we leverage this blame at victims because they could have got away. They had other opportunities to recognize that things were dangerous and they did nothing and so on and so forth. So they're away having a nice time. Now, on the 11th of December, the pair end up heading out to a local bar. They go to watch a football game. And whilst they are at the bar, Rivers basically starts to become more and more angry at Lauren. She is accused by him of having sex with the bartender in the bathroom, and at that point they leave. Now, understandably, alcohol could be involved. Certainly, perpetrators tend to be more violent when they are under the influence. But the delusion that you can hear in the moment that I've just spoken, that he's experiencing, the delusion that he is projecting, this idea that Lauren, who's basically on a road trip with her boyfriend, has talked to a bartender, then left him and had sex with this bartender in the toilet. It's ludicrous beyond measure. And also, Lauren's not stupid. She's a very gifted young woman. She's a lovely young woman. She would know exactly what the consequences would be if she did anything like that when she is with somebody like Rivers. Rivers has form. He's been violent with her before. There is no way on God's earth for £1 million she would actually go ahead and do what was suggested she did by Rivers, because the consequences for her would be grave. Let me tell you. The consequences for Lauren are grave, even though everything that he said to her was a lie. She'd never done any of the things he accused her of. Now, according to the affidavit, once they leave the bar, Rivers begins with the violence. He slaps her. He punches Laura. Also, he takes her phone away. He's going to stop her calling for help, essentially, by doing that. Then he drives away from the area, and he refuses to stop the car. Now, Lauren is terrified. She is pleading for him to stop the car. Clearly, she's been in this situation before. This probably feels even more escalatory than prior experiences and occasions, and she's terrified for her life. It's as simple as that. Now, after he eventually stops the car, he pulls into a parking lot, then begins the violent, persistent assault, and it is so drawn out. He attacks her horrifically. Lauren actually ended up telling the police that she had a gun in her bag and that was in the back seat, but that Rivers had held her down, which meant that she couldn't get it. But even the fact that she has that conversation with the police, that she was thinking in that moment that she was so afraid for her life that she needed to get hold of her gun. And I would imagine that if she got hold of that gun, she could have shot him. And certainly on a self-defense level, she would have been well within her rights to do that. So that is going through her head in that moment. And for somebody who clearly loves Rivers to be thinking, I need to save myself, please let me get my gun so I can shoot you, that is extreme. And that shows you just how terrified she is and how convinced she is that her life is at risk. So he, of course, has the physical strength. He's athletic. It's as simple as that. She's a very slight, petite girl. He has the physical domination down without a problem in this moment. Now, she recalls being in that car park, being violently attacked constantly for about an hour. I'm sure that the idea of even being punched and hit for a minute for most of us just defies reality. We just can't imagine having to go through such agony. Imagine an hour, and this guy is going in on her hard. Now, she said during the attack, she was trying to defend herself. She was kicking, she was screaming. She's actually blowing the car's horn every time she sees a vehicle pass, just desperate to get somebody to come and help her. But nobody does. Rivers actually held his forearm against Lauren's throat, and she said he did that until she got black, until she got dizzy. So he's choking her out. And we all know that when people are willing to go ahead and do that, they often don't have an understanding of, firstly, how dangerous that is, and secondly, how permanent it is on occasions, because you can kill somebody that way very, very easily. But he's lost the plot at this moment in time. He doesn't care. All he wants to do is to hurt her. Now, she carries on screaming for help. She's desperate for anybody to intervene. And according to the affidavit, there's an 11-minute recording that's been caught on Johansson's phone, literally catching some of what he said in the attack. And it's horrific. So during this attack, where this petite young woman is having the breath choked from her, Bryson Rivers is calmly saying to her, "Hey, I'm going to be real with you. If you move at all tonight from the spot you're in, I swear to God, you ain't waking up to see tomorrow morning. So I suggest you cooperate and calm down." Imagine having somebody being so violent towards you, being so unbelievably aggressive and dangerous, and yet they're not screaming, they're not shouting, they're calm, they're in control. They're measured. They're cold. That is scarier than anything. Don't get me wrong, we can never forgive an individual who loses the plot and is violent in these kind of situations. But when somebody has got into a psychological fever, they've lost control entirely. It's one of the reasons why crimes of passion are discussed. That's something that we don't accept. We don't forgive, but we understand where the triggers potentially arrived and how that escalated and why it's completely unacceptable. But nonetheless, we can see the actual pattern leading to the event. But when somebody is cool, calm, calculated, they're the kind of people that can walk up to you and execute you without compassion, without concern, without conscience. And she must know that. Also, during this conversation, he's saying, "I literally scheduled marriage counselling for those." Do you realise that? Can you see the language there? I literally scheduled marriage counselling for us. So I'm the person who's doing the right thing here. I'm the one thinking about how to solve our issues. Do you realise that? Now, I'm just going to throw it out there. But to anyone who's been in a challenging experience relationally, the last thing that you really need is the partner who's suggesting they want to work through things using this as something to beat you with. And that's what he's doing. I'm a good person. I scheduled marriage counselling. And you're acting like this now, and you're the reason that we're going to fail because you're the problem. That projection of blame. Not, "I am literally trapping the air from getting into your throat. I am literally putting you in a position where you might die. Maybe that's the reason our relationship's failing." No. The reason that it's failing is because she's just not understanding how grateful she should be for him arranging marriage counselling, even though the reason for that therapy would be required because he's a violent perpetrator. And Rivers was actually telling Lauren this to the noises of her trying to breathe. You can actually hear on the recording that basically she is struggling to get breath in. He even says, "Bite me, bitch. I dare you." I mean, this is a woman who's losing her breath, might die because of his actions, and that's how he's responding to her. Now, later on, he actually said to her, "All I gotta do is drive 15 minutes outward and I can drop you off in the woods, right? And no one will ever see you again." He also allegedly, in these recordings, threatens to kill Lauren and to hide her body where no one could find it. And I bet she believes every word, because this kind of violence is something that escalates often to individuals losing their lives. He said, "Nobody is going to be able to find you, baby." And just the sinister reality of calling her baby, when baby is associated with love, with care, with nurture, and he's doing the absolute opposite where it is concerned with Lauren and her safety. Now, understandably, Lauren isn't able to make out words because she's being literally choked to death at that moment in time, almost. So the sounds coming from her responses are unintelligible. But the audio from that recording suggests that for most of the time, she's just unable to speak because she's so badly injured. She has heard choking for long stretches, So just imagine how terrified she is. She's also mumbling, help, help. At one point, she says she can't see at all. At one point, she does manage to get out of the words, baby, I just want to go home. So she's pleading with him. She's absolutely pleading with him. And Rivers, during this situation, is basically describing her injuries. So he's enjoying letting her know how badly harmed she is. He says that she looks like she's hemorrhaging tonight. And he tells her that her head's swollen up like a fucking bowling ball. And my God, her head really is swollen up like a bowling ball. Rivers is also heard making it absolutely clear that this attack, so the one that she's enduring in that moment, is not the first. He actually says, you know, whenever I hit you last and I beat your ass because of you crying, this is the same situation. So he's literally admitting that on previous occasions he's harmed her, but let's hear what he's actually bringing out of the reasoning behind that. He's saying, when I hurt you before and you dared to cry, yeah, I beat your ass for that because you dared to cry. So this is a man who's incredibly comfortable being this abusive and also is very effective at disassociating responsibility and instead is blameful of his victim. If you didn't cry, I wouldn't have to beat your ass. So we're talking about a very high level perpetrator. Also, he does at one point say, I have mental problems, I have issues, I've been holding everything back, trying to work with you. Again, what's he saying in this moment? He's saying, I have mental issues. You know, you have to feel sorry for me. There's something maybe not working for me at the moment on a mental health level. And you know, if you could just get things right, if you could just be perfect, if you could work with me, if you could just be an absolute A1 girlfriend and do nothing wrong ever and everything the way that I want it to be, then you know what, I wouldn't have to beat you up. I mean, again, the projection psychologically is enormous onto her. And at another point, he says to her that he might kill himself that night. He said, I'm not trying to pretend like I'm being a fucking great person right now. So when I shoot myself and I blow my head off in that apartment tonight and you look like this, everyone will understand. Yeah, they will, Rivers. They'll understand that you are a high-level domestic abuser and beater of women. That's what people will understand. Nobody will feel sorry for you. No one will be thinking, oh, well, at the end of the day, Lauren probably deserved it. At the end of the day, what else could he have done? He just had to go ahead and blow his brains out in an apartment because she was such a bad girlfriend. That's the way he's projecting this. And also, the reality is that when somebody tells you that they are willing to kill themselves if it means that they get to kill you, that is a terrifying scenario to be in, because the survival mechanism we expect for others is that they know that there is an action that could debilitate them in a certain way that would be negative for their life, such as a criminal offence that can get them locked up, or indeed harming themselves where they can't make it back because they die. These are things we expect human beings to have a protective mechanism over and to prevent themselves from acting in that way. He's saying, I don't have that protective mechanism. And that must be absolutely harrowing for her in that moment. Now, during the attack, Rivers does something really odd. He calls his mother. So he's literally engaged in this attack and he calls his mom. Now, I appreciate children have close relationships with parents, and when they are distressed or when they are in trouble, they might be the first port of call. But it puts his mother in quite a precarious situation, bearing in mind there is literally a serious felony going on. And also, she's got a lack of power because there's not very much that she can do in that moment, aside from call the authorities, if she can find where her son is or enlist the help of others. There's not something immediate that she can do, and it must be very scary for her. Now, I'm not going to say that his mother is perfect. We'll talk about that a little bit later on, but I do think that it would be a terrifying call to receive. Now, she said she was on and off the phone with him. She heard a lot of screaming on the other end of the phone. She realizes at this point that the situation has become physical. She asked him, have you hurt Lauren? And he basically said that there's blood everywhere. She then speaks to the police. So she's obviously got Lauren's best interests in that moment at heart. She wants to make sure that she's protecting Lauren, but also she's going to want to make sure that she's protecting her son. And if things are really getting out of hand and Lauren's covered in blood and this could end up fatal, for example, she's not going to want her son to be on a murder charge. So speaking to the police is absolutely imperative. And also, if your son has got in contact with you and admitted that they're carrying out a crime and that there is a victim in dire straits and you don't do anything, well, then you're complicit in the crime, essentially. So there's a whole heap of reasons why she would reach out to the police. I would argue, though, the most important one is that she probably thought, oh my God, I need to get this situation resolved. I need Lauren to be safe. She then calls Lauren's father. And at this point, he's informed that their son, as in her son, had pistol whipped his daughter. And then he calls 911 immediately, terrified by this. Metro Police are then contacted and told that Rivers is holding Lauren hostage. Now, her dad, he tracks Lauren's phone on an app, and that meant that the police were able to fortunately track down the couple. So police arrive on the scene. They actually find a blue car with the windows fogged up. Bear in mind, this attack's been going on for an hour, so it's all going to be steamed up in there. Nashville police officer, a guy called James Harbin, he approaches the vehicle, and as he approaches, he can physically see it, as well as hear Lauren just kicking and screaming for help. And he said when he actually got to the car and he opened the door, both of them were covered in blood and Rivers was literally on top of Lauren. Lauren, at this point, distressed, horrified, petrified, terrified, runs outside. She's just wearing an underwear. So she's not even in a state of complete dress. She's absolutely distraught beyond belief. And that's because emotionally she has been ravaged by this man. And psychologically, she's been completely terrified. And on top of that, she's been humiliated because she's in her underwear. So he's literally affected her on every single level. And on top of this, she's dealing with the physical reeling of the actions and injuries that he's caused her. Now, Rivers is immediately placed in handcuffs because it's a bang to rights case. There is no question about this. He's dead to rights, full stop. They have got this man in the commission of a crime. There is a young woman covered in blood. It's her blood. It's not his blood. We're not talking about a scenario where she's been violent towards him. Quite the contrary. And one of the things that, again, is really quite chilling is that now the police are there. Now she's been essentially freed from this scenario. He's still calm. He just goes ahead. He follows the police's commands. And again, that very cool, calculating, calm way of being, it speaks to something very unusual. We would not imagine, after being confronted and indeed arrested by the police, that there would not be some kind of emotional reaction. There is an expectation of that. Even if that expectation is that you've just been caught and now you're scared because you wanted to get away with it. But there's nothing. He's just calm and goes ahead and follows police commands. Although, we could also bring in the belief that potentially in his mind, he thinks, well, I'm going to seem like somebody who really behaves. I'm going to seem like a guy who doesn't kick off in these scenarios. I'm going to seem like somebody who is completely in command of my emotions. And then they're going to think, well, what did she do? How did she make him end up doing A, B, or C? The mind of a perpetrator can often work in that way. So they can be the most violent, abusive human being. And when confronted by other people who haven't seen what's played out, they can go into this state where they seem totally approachable, totally in control of their faculties, and make it out as if to say that person that you're seeing there in that complete state. Would somebody like me, who's just so cool and calm and rational, would I be able to go ahead and do something so irrational and harmful as that? So that can also be a manipulation tactic. Now, in the car, they do find a pistol which is covered in blood on the floor. They also found two rocks in the car which are covered in blood, which clearly have been used to attack her with. He's got no injuries, but wow. As the pictures show, Lauren has got multiple injuries. So she's got a cut on her forehead. Her face, as you can see, was severely beaten. Her upper lip is really swollen. One of her eyes is literally swollen shut. And at the scene, when Lauren is talking to the police and the paramedic, she basically says, look, he got mad. I was talking to another man. And the result of me talking to another man was that I got beaten up for an hour, which is beyond belief when you consider that that was enough for him to snap. And of course, where perpetrators are concerned, it's not the victim's actions that ever leads to this kind of beating. It's the way that the abuser feels inside. If they're frustrated, if they're angry, if life isn't going well, if they've had some bad news, if somebody's annoyed them, and so on and so forth, it doesn't have to be anything to do with the victim. The victim is a punching bag. The victim is a place where all of the frustration can be vented. The victim is an individual who can receive the blows physically that that individual as a perpetrator might be feeling emotionally. And they have no problem with doing that because you can always set a test for your partner to fail. If your partner hasn't got an understanding of what it is you're testing them on, such as, are they going to make me a cup of tea? Are they going to agree to do A, B, or C? Do they want to have sex with me today? All of these things can be used as leverage if that person doesn't give that perpetrator exactly what they want. So he's looking for any possibility to take whatever he's feeling inside out on her. In this case, she dares to talk to another man, which is something that every human being, whether you're male or female, will do in your life. We always have conversations with strangers. The average human being has about 8 interactions with strangers every single day. So that would give him 8 reasons every single day to beat Lauren up. But of course, it also tells you just how many eggshells she would have been treading on. Because if simply speaking to a barman, for example, is going to give you an hour being beaten up, in the end, it's going to render you entirely silent. And we see perpetrators do this as well. They isolate individuals from their friends, their family, from social experience, often just making them stay in the home because it's the only place that they feel that they won't do something wrong, resulting in horrific beatings. And of course, then that perpetrator just changes the boundaries. Well, it used to be about you speaking to a stranger. Now it's about the fact that my tea wasn't made for me on time, and so on and so forth. So that beating lasted for an hour because she dared to have a conversation with a man who wasn't him. Now, body-worn camera footage from the police that night show Lauren just shaking. She's crying. She's on the phone with her dad. She's saying, I was in the car with Bryson. He was holding me down so I couldn't scream. And she said to the police as well, I thought he was going to be okay. So clearly she got in that car with him after leaving the place they were at together where they were having a drink. And he'd obviously convinced her that everything was going to be fine. Again, highly manipulative, rageful inside, just looking for an opportunity to abuse her, but making her feel safe enough to get into the car with him so he can do what he wants with her. That manipulation, that Machiavellian streak that's clearly very, very much part of his makeup. She also said, my left eye isn't opening, and the body cam footage captures that, and her eye certainly isn't opening. It looks so badly swollen. Now, understandably, Lauren's taken to hospital. She stayed there for 2 days. And then Lauren's lovely dad, and I say that because if there is one thing that I really relate to in this moment, it's that my father, and I'm sure a lot of your fathers would have done this, he just got in his car, he drove to Nashville, he went and collected his daughter, he took her home to Mississippi because he wanted her to know she was safe. And he actually said she appeared as if she'd been hit over 100 times. He said, it's just really difficult to hear your daughter crying for her life on a video. I went up there and picked up Lauren from the hospital. I saw what she looked like. I took care of her for the first week afterward because she was really hurt. She's one tough lady. I mean, she was telling me she was okay. I know she couldn't see that good and everything else. He also went on to say, well, look, I'm an orthopedic surgeon and I do joint replacement surgery. I'm not a psychiatrist, but this isn't rocket science, okay? I know he was a psychopath. If you look it up and Google it, it's a very scary person. I had to warn her repeatedly over and over, you have to stay away from this guy. The problem is these types of people are so manipulative and they talk their way into anything and they find a way to have the person they're abusing act like they did nothing wrong. He's 100% right. So he might not be a psychiatrist, but he's very well schooled on the manipulation techniques of psychopaths and narcissists and individuals like Rivers. Now, Rivers at this point is arrested. He's charged on 4 charges, including 2 counts of especially aggravated kidnapping, aggravated stalking, and witness coercion. Lauren actually didn't want to press charges. It breaks my heart that. It breaks my heart that Lauren is almost killed and she does not want to press charges against this man. The man who has shown her an absolute lack of respect, who has beaten her within an inch of her life, who has terrified her on a multitude of levels, but she still doesn't want to cause him harm. We are talking about the absolute opposite kind of person to Rivers, where Lauren is concerned. And you see, this is the thing about perpetrators. They're very effective about choosing particular victims. If you can get a victim who is just really compassionate in their nature, is very protective in their nature, is an individual who wants to change the world for the better, and you can exploit that, you can use it very effectively for your own purposes. Because Lauren wants to believe the best in Rivers. She's seen him on his best days at school, no doubt. She's seen him in his best days as an athlete. She's seen him in his best days with friends. She's seen the guy he could have been. And so even though she's also seen the guy he truly is, the monster that lurks beneath the mask of acceptability, believing that that's who he truly is too devastating for her to accept. She wants to think that maybe if she did A, B, or C, maybe if she changed, maybe if she hadn't said A, B, or C, things wouldn't have escalated. Maybe if she hadn't talked to that guy in the pub, maybe things wouldn't have got out of control. Maybe if she hadn't acted in a certain way in the car. That's what victims do. And they do it because they want to believe that they can control their environment, just like people who are not in abusive situations want to believe that somehow we have a control in our world. And if we just learn to do A, B, or C, it will result in D, E, and F occurring. That's why victims die. Because they take the person who has shown themselves in their worst moments to be the worst kind of human. And they dismiss that part of their nature. And instead, they think about that person in their best moments. They want to believe that their love can heal them. They want to believe that that beautiful time that they spent together early on, when they're being love bombed and they're being made to feel like the most important person in that person's world, that they're going to be able to return to that. When you are a predator, you cause so much instability in your victim's life that they start to reason with unreasonable. They start to believe when you tell them that they're the problem, that they need to change. And you love that person so deeply in spite of them being a predator that you try your best to accommodate their needs. And then you find yourself dire situations or dead. That's what happens. And that's what we're talking about right now. So she doesn't want to press these charges. And he, of course, is calling her, because that's what you do, you know? Even though you shouldn't be having any conversations, any contact with somebody that you've nearly killed, he's not going to listen to that. Because this isn't a guy who feels like he needs to follow protocol and boundaries. And he actually says to her, look, I'm ready to come home. I want to come back to Mississippi. I want to be with you again. He said, listen, people are going to talk to you about this case. And this is basically witness tampering. It's as simple as that, because charges have been pressed. He shouldn't be having any conversations with the victim about what she needs to say. That's actually perverting the course of justice. But that's what he's doing. So he's saying to her, you know, if somebody calls you about the case, you need to come up with a story. And she says, well, listen, I'm really concerned, because when what happened, I wasn't thinking about what would happen to you. I was just thinking about what had happened to me on the night. I'm worried about the police saying what I said to them in the statement that played out the night that you were arrested. She went on to say, I remember bits and pieces, and I'm kind of worried that they'll take that as my official statement. So she said, I'm confused, and there was a whole lot just going on. So again, she's apologizing to him for telling the truth after she has been freed from the scenario where she'd basically been kidnapped and beaten to a pulp. She's feeling bad that she just told the truth. And this is what predators do. They make the victim a prisoner psychologically. So now she feels like a terrible human being because she dared to tell the truth. That's the level Lauren is operating on, that she's the bad guy. This beautiful young woman who's done nothing wrong, that she's the bad guy. He then says, just tell them this is what happened. And he's come up with this story. He says, if they ask about any outside influences, say no. So he's basically saying, you know, just bring it down to yourself. Tell them you were the problem, essentially. So he tells her to say that one of the big problems that he's going to face if she goes ahead and presses these charges is that he wants to join the military and a prosecution will prevent him from being able to do so. He says, say that a military career is going to straighten me out. Say that probation and classes are going to help me a lot. Tell them I've never really had a chance. Tell them all these things that are going to make it easier for me. And he goes on to just tell her that you know what to do, baby, you know what to do. They ended that call saying that they loved each other. And I believe fully that Lauren believes that she does love him. She just doesn't realize how much of a captive she's become. And this, like I said, happens time and time again in perpetrator-victim relationships. Now, over the course of Rivers' 7 months incarcerated, court records showed that he actually completed over 2,000 calls. 2,000! Some of those were, of course, to Lauren, somebody that he realistically shouldn't be having any contact with, but 2,000 calls? This is a guy who clearly doesn't believe that he should be in there. This is a guy who's clearly calling as many people as possible to garner as much support and to try to find a way out of prison at any cost. Now, he's initially indicted by Judge Davidson in April on all four counts, and his bond at that point was set at $250,000. Now, Lauren's statement, as you will all be aware from what I've already said, starts to change. So it goes from a very clear picture of her being attacked to changing dramatically. So when she speaks in court, she basically tells the court that she fell asleep and she woke up hitting him. So she literally has fallen asleep in the car. She wakes up, she's punching him, she's pulling out a chunk of his hair. So she's gone from being asleep now to being a very violent assaulter. She said she then got out of the car, then she just got back in and she threw a metal water bottle at him. Now, what she's basically saying is he had to defend himself. You know, I went crazy, I went wild, I just lost my mind, I was throwing heavy objects at him. What else was he gonna do apart from beat me up for an hour in the car? And also, bit of an issue with her statement in court because Rivers had no injuries on him whatsoever. And as far as I'm concerned, he's neither an X-Man or a Marvel character, and he doesn't just heal on the spot. So we can tell. It's just a cover story. She also said that the car was bloody because she was spitting and got blood everywhere. She went on to say that the reason that her eye was so swollen was because they were struggling over the pistol. She said that Rivers didn't ever hit her with a closed fist and she had absolutely no idea how her head was lacerated. She said that she didn't remember telling the police that he beat her, and she said that she was in her underwear only because she got hot. So this man has managed to capture this woman in such a way, to such a degree, that she is standing in court lying about her own behavior. She's trying to make herself seem like the bad person. Her feelings for him totally overwhelm her to the degree where, in spite of this man basically being love's executioner, embodying exactly that, she wants to free him. She doesn't want him to face the consequences of his actions. And what happens with victims is they will remember themselves in the relationship. And like I said, no one's perfect in a relationship. There will be things that Lauren will have said and done in her relationship that she won't be proud of. I'm not saying anything terrible. It's certainly not saying that I've found anything in the research, the examples that I'm saying, that just on a human level, no one's perfect in a relationship. And if he can manipulate her to believe that whatever little fractures and chinks in her armor in the relationship can be exaggerated to such a degree where somehow he's the victim, if he can make her feel manipulated to a point where she sees things from a completely broken perspective, a perspective that he's created, then he can manipulate her to stand in court and do this. And it is heartbreaking. It is heartbreaking because she is a young woman who has been beaten within an inch of her life. She has been treated in the most reprehensible manner, and even now, in spite of that, all she has is love in her heart. And that is used so grotesquely about her. And in these moments, to some degree, she's painting the signature on her own death warrant, because this man stood in court that she's defending. This man is a monster. He's a predator of the highest level, no matter how much he's managed to guilt trip her into believing that she's the reason that he's in this situation. Now, the judge, they noted that the physical evidence simply didn't support the testimony. And Lauren's father, Lance, he drove from Mississippi to court in Nashville to actually plead with the judge. He said, please do not let him out of jail. He said, I sat in the courtroom in Nashville and I told the judge that if you let him out, he's going to kill her. He'd assaulted her. This was probably the fifth or sixth time where they would get into a fight and he would beat her. We would get her away from him for a while, but he would always find a way to weasel his way back in. So again, Lauren's absolutely lovely father being there to protect her and trying his best to help her make the decisions that she's not willing to overtly make by being there to plead with the judge. She's telling a different story, but he's telling the story that needs to be told to that judge. And for a time it works, and Rivers remains in jail. But on the 13th of March, Rivers requested a reduced bond. So he'd been in jail for 7 months, as I said. And at this point, Rivers' lawyer convinced Judge Cheryl Blackburn to lower his bail. So to lower the bail from $250,000 to $150,000, that happened on the 3rd of April, 2024. Now, that bond reduction, it set out several conditions for Rivers. So these included that he had to wear a CPS ankle monitor, he'd have to live in Davidson County, he couldn't have any contact with Lauren Johansson, of course, because that's his victim, and he could not possess any kind of weapon. Now, records show that he did actually have an address lined up where he'd be living in Nashville. And at this point, elite bonding was approved by the court to post his bond on June the 4th. However, they actually backed out of providing Rivers' bond. So elite bonding owner Bill Tomlinson, he decided against handling the case. He felt that he was really worried about how Rivers was going to live in Davidson County without having family there. So he was suspicious of whether that would work out. Now, on the 5th of June, on-time bail bonding and Brooks bonding were approved to post Rivers' bond. Now, they were asked to go to court to sign an order which specified his bail conditions and also obviously laid out who would be paying. Now, the bail order was 2 pages long. The first page included the conditions of Rivers' release, and it clearly stated that Rivers must be fitted with an electronic monitoring device by a company called Tracking Solutions. He was also not allowed to leave Davidson County. He must be released from jail to a representative of his bonding company between 7 a.m. and 4 p.m. And the second page of the order said that the defendant is responsible for all costs associated with electronic monitoring installation. Now, a bonding agent from Brooks Bail Bonding went to the state warrant and bond office in the downtown jail and posted Rivers' bond at 1:30 p.m. on the 24th of June. Now, when the bond was posted, the bonding agent was not told the conditions of Rivers' release, which seems utterly bizarre. It's been said that this is standard practice. So on the 24th of June 2024 at 4:05 p.m., Bryson Rivers is released from the Maximum Correctional Centre on Harding Place. Now, in violation of the bail order, so we're already starting from a very bad point because there should be no violation of the bail order when it comes down to him being released, Rivers is released on his own. So as opposed to having that representative of the bonding company turn up, he's just let out by himself. Now, this was apparently because of a failure to communicate the conditions of the release to the sheriff's office, but you would imagine that they would have all of this in hand. You would imagine this is not atypical and they would know how to go through the appropriate motions. Now, at 4:36 p.m., Rivers actually called Brooks Bail Bonding, and at this point, an agent picks up Rivers in the Harding Place area. Now, the owner of Brooks Bail Bonding has said that their company had not seen the first page of the bond order from June the 5th, which basically outlined the conditions of his release. She said that that meant the company did not know which monitoring company Rivers was supposed to go to get his GPS ankle monitor. And apparently, as they were unaware where they were supposed to go, the agent took Rivers to a newly formed company called Freedom Monitoring Services. That business was formed just a week before Rivers was released. And that company was created by Nikido Wilhoit, whom it has been said was an employee of Brooks Bail Bonding. So a company that is essentially owned by Nikita Wilhoit, but she's actually an employee of Brooks Bail Bonding and is getting the work now from Brooks Bail Bonding. Happens all the time. Your friends or you're a director on different businesses and you just happen to make sure that you get business through the business that you were working for or a director of. It happens all the time, I get it. But ultimately, it does make you think, well, is it that they hadn't seen what the conditions were meant to be, or was it just that they wanted to siphon money and services to another company they were involved with? Just throwing it out there, because that happens a lot also in business. Now, when Rivers arrived at the monitoring company, the company did not actually have the court order with Rivers' bond conditions, as the court had sent the conditions to Tracking Solutions, the monitoring company that was supposed to be used. So again, this should all have been figured out. If the conditions have been sent to Tracking Solutions because Tracking Solutions are meant to be doing it, then Tracking Solutions should be the ones putting that on Rivers. But no, because Rivers has been sent to another place that just happens to have relationships with the overarching company. So again, that really makes me a little bit suspicious of this decision. Now, despite not knowing Rivers' release conditions, Freedom Monitoring Services fitted Rivers with a GPS ankle monitor. Now, Rivers told Freedom Monitoring Services that he would be leaving Tennessee for Van Cleve, Mississippi, which he shouldn't be doing. Why is he telling them this? And what does that mean about Freedom Monitoring Services and what they actually see themselves in charge of in this case? Because it seems very bizarre that he's just saying things such as, I'll be leaving the area that I'm only believing, and they're not immediately acting on this. Now, on the 28th of June, officials become aware of the mistakes that have been made. Tracking Solutions, the monitoring company that was supposed to be used, they send a report to an assistant district attorney saying Rivers had not actually come into the office. The district attorney's office then tell the court that Rivers is in violation of his bond conditions. Rivers at this point is ordered to appear in court on July the 2nd. Now on the 28th of June, Freedom Monitoring Services received the court order with the bond conditions for the first time. Bear in mind, Lauren's family were initially unaware that Rivers has even been released until Lance Johansson, her father, gets a voicemail from the County District Attorney's Office on the 28th of June, 2024. And it said, this is Bailey calling from the District Attorney's Office in Nashville. Bryson Rivers was released from custody. He was supposed to report straight to a GPS company and be put on a GPS monitor, and he was not to leave Davidson County. But as soon as he was released, he did not report to that GPS monitoring company and he has not been heard from. I wanted to make sure Lauren is safe. The very fact that that was a voicemail left on her father's phone would suggest, I don't know, she wasn't safe because a perpetrator who all but killed her is now on the loose, isn't actually sticking to what he's been told he needs to stick to, and is seriously a risk for her. But apparently, a voicemail is acceptable. You know, why don't you dispatch officers? Why don't you go and do a welfare check on Lauren herself? Why don't you do everything in your power to make sure you're protecting this victim who's already been horribly affected by this perpetrator? Now, her father is utterly perplexed at this point. He's utterly perplexed about the fact that Rivers is walking the streets. He can't believe that any judge has allowed him out on reduced bond and without the proper ankle monitor. He was quoted as saying, you have a grand jury indictment. You have recordings of a woman screaming for her life in evidence. You have the photographs of the attempted killing is what I call it. And then you have a body camera from the police officer finding her bloody, almost beat to death, suffocated, and just barely saved alive. And that doesn't seem enough to keep somebody in jail. And I completely concur. What the hell is going on that any judge would believe it was appropriate to reduce the bond to allow somebody with such a predatory outlook, with such predatory history, with such violent capacity and capability, and with such actionable offences of almost killing his partner? How is that a person that should be walking the streets? It just beggars belief entirely. Now, Rivers is contacted by Freedom Monitoring. At that point, he's told he needs to return to Nashville. He's told that there's an issue with his monitor. I would say that we have to acknowledge he does arrive on the 29th of June. And at this point, a new monitor is placed on him. And at that point, tracking is resumed. Rivers then leaves Nashville again. So he's just come back, essentially, to put a punctuation mark there, hasn't he? Oh, well, here I am. I've come in. I've got my tracking changed. And now he's leaving again. He's bought us some time. I'm not a terrible person. See how manipulative he is? He's come back. He's got that change. He knows he's breached everything, but it's all going to be seen as a mistake as far as he's concerned. And that means he's going to get more time to go ahead and do whatever it is he's planning to do. And believe me, this man has been planning what he's going to do from the get-go, without a shadow of a doubt. Now, around midnight on the 2nd of June, Rivers told Freedom Monitoring that he wouldn't make the court hearing in Nashville, which was supposed to be later that day. Around 10 a.m. on the July 2nd, the battery on Rivers' ankle monitor starts to die. This is a man who doesn't care about the fact his tracking is going to die, because this is a man who knows exactly what's going to play out. This is a man who has one intention in mind. Because the truth is about Rivers, he's probably figured out he's going to go to prison for quite a period of time, in spite of the fact that Lauren has been denying that he was so abusive. He's probably realised that, you know, he's looking at a few years at least. And the idea of Lauren not being watched by him, Lauren not being controlled by him, Lauren not being followed by him, not being judged by him, not being contained by him, not being under his control, that's probably started to drive him crazy, because Lauren is his. He's a high-level perpetrator. She's just something that he owns. And if he can't have her, then no one is going to have her. That's how they operate. And yeah, to people looking in and thinking, well, he'd get out after a few years. You know, even if he got 5 years, 10 years even, he's got the rest of his life to live. No. That would mean that you would have a conscience about the typical experiences, ideas, hopes, fears that an average human being would have. That's not how perpetrators operate. It's not about the big picture. It's not about 10, 15, 20 years down the line. It's about now. That's mine. It's daring to leave me on some level. And I would rather lead the rest of my life in a different way to how I'd planned, knowing that she didn't win, knowing that she doesn't get to have the future that I don't wish for her to have. That's more important than to actually allow that person to move on with their life, to be free of that individual who's been violent towards them. They can't stand it because, like I said, they're property to these individuals. They belong to them, and how dare they believe that they can have a life without them. So when his monitor starts to die, that's because he's already set in motion what's going to happen next. Now, they try to contact him. He's unable to be reached. His mother's contacted. She says that she hadn't seen him. On the 3rd of July, Rivers is last tracked to Beach Boulevard, and then he ignores all calls from the monitoring company, full stop. Then a warrant is obviously issued for Rivers' arrest. This happens on the 2nd of July because he's violated his bail conditions, but this is all too little too late. Now, Lauren's dad didn't actually listen to the voicemail notifying him of Rivers' release until the 1st of July. Bear that in mind. So he's been blindsided by this. This is news that should have been delivered face to face, front to front, man to man, woman to man, whatever. Somebody should have been present with him. Somebody should have gone and told him. Somebody should have checked on Lauren. All of this should have been playing out, because the only person who matters here is Lauren. She is the victim in this case. And there is somebody who wants to harm her now walking the streets. Now, bear in mind, when he gets that message, he calls his daughter straight away, and she's already aware that Rivers has been released. She'd actually been told that he was getting an ankle monitor and that apparently it turned into a real mess. Her dad then said that when he spoke to Lauren, she was terrified, absolutely terrified. And clearly, she was afraid that something awful could play out. So after he realizes that this man is now completely lost sight of, he calls her again. At this point, she doesn't answer. Now, he does receive text messages from her number, But he says straight away they didn't look like the way that she took. Now we see this time and time again, don't we, where a perpetrator does something horrible to a victim and then tries to pretend that they're the victim just to buy themselves some time. So even though her father's getting text messages, it feels off. It feels like that isn't Lauren at all. Now on July the 2nd, her dad gets a notification that Lauren's Life 360 tracker has been turned off. Then Lauren's younger sister, who lives with Lauren, wakes up and finds to her horror that Lauren isn't home. She also finds that the security camera in their home's been smashed and the door sat open. So I've just described what she's waking up to, but can we just think about what that means? Imagine what's happened to Lauren. The security camera in the home has been smashed, the door's open. This is something that tells a story of a woman who didn't want to leave, but had no choice. And you can imagine, can't you, the psychological horror and fear that Lauren goes through when he appears at that house, and when she sees that he's broken the security camera, and when she sees that he's in that state that she knows something terrible is going to happen next. Because what else could happen next? He's almost killed her before. He's not come to make up. He's come to execute her, in my mindset. That's his sole intention. That's his sole purpose. He's here to finish the job he didn't get to finish last time. He's here to make her pay for a future of his that she's not ruined, but that he's holding her accountable for. That's why he's there. He's there because in his final moments of freedom, he is going to take her down. He's going to take her out at all costs. That's exactly what he does. Her dad files a missing persons report with the local Hattiesburg police. When he calls the next morning for an update, to his horror, he realises nothing's really been done. So now he knows that in spite of telling the police that his daughter is probably in mortal danger, they've done very little. Obviously, he said, we assumed they were going to track the vehicle and try and find her. But they didn't do it till Wednesday at 3 p.m. when I insisted they find out where her car was. Imagine the systemic failures I'm talking about right now. This man, this perpetrator, this predator has been allowed to be freed by some crazy judge. Then he's not been tracked appropriately. Then even though an arrest warrant has been served, nothing's been done. And now when the victim has basically clearly been abducted, the police have still done nothing. And it's up to the father in this case of the victim to actually insist that they track her car. So now, under pressure from her father, the police use OnStar to track her car. And on the 3rd of July, Lauren's car pinged at the Wolf River Cemetery in a very isolated part of Gulfport, Mississippi. Police, along with her father, rushed to the scene. Imagine that. Her dad is the driving force. Her dad is the person pressing the authorities to go and do their very basic job. This is a vulnerable young woman with a man who's a known felon who has likely taken her and harmed her. And her father turns up on the scene at the same time as those police officers that should have been there to protect her. Now, when the police arrive, Rivers was in the car, but then he's seen fleeing into the woods, and it leads up to an hour-long chase. But it's not the only thing that's in the car, because Lauren's body is also found in her own car in that cemetery. And her father found her, and her body was mutilated. It was wrapped in sheets and rubbish bags. It was lying across the back seat, and she had been brutally beaten. Lauren's dad helped the coroner lift her body out of the car, and he said it was just mutilated. He said her face was smashed in, her head was smashed in, she was brutally beaten. He also went on to add there were multiple holes in her head. Her father has to live with that image of his beautiful, broken, killed daughter in his head. A totally preventable tragedy. And that's the last image of this gorgeous girl, multiple holes in her head. Now, Rivers was finally tracked down at about 11:30 p.m. There'd been a manhunt that lasted nearly 9 hours at this point, and they searched about 55 offices from 8 different agencies. Too little too late, don't you think? They should have all been doing that before he got to murder this poor girl. They used drones, they used helicopters, they used dogs in the search. 23-year-old Rivers was booked into the Harrison County Jail about 1 a.m. on the Thursday, where he was kept on a $1 million bond charged with murder. Sorry, can we just stop for a minute? A $1 million bond? Yes, it's the $1 million bond. It's a lot of money. What if somebody posts the $1 million bond? Well, then he'd be able to walk free from jail. He's a high-level murderer, kidnapper, violent perpetrator. He is. And it's fine. You'd have to have $1 million to actually get him out. Why is there a bond at all? Well, we just like to give people a bit of hope. Sorry, are you the judge in this case? Yeah, I am. Are you smoking crack? Are you on the crack pipe? Have you fashioned some kind of chillum out of some kind of, I don't know, wood? And are you inhaling it on the regular? Because you'd have to be smoking a high-level crack to actually believe that it's ever okay to have a known murderer just walk in the streets, just have a walk, you know, just go and throw it in there. Literally, every rule and boundary you put in front of him, he broke them all. Seriously, cut out the crack smoking. It's a simple, why are you a judge anyway? Honestly, I don't even know where to go with that. You don't give a murderer $1 million bond, not when you know it's bound to rights. I appreciate there'll be some cases where the suspect hasn't necessarily got the evidence around them that suggests that they're some kind of horrific murderer of the highest level. But this guy should be kept away from every single woman in the history of being a woman. End of. Now, we haven't got the length of sentence he's going to face, but a preliminary trial date is set for 1:30 p.m. on the 31st of July at the Gulfport Justice Court in Harrison County. Her poor father. Where do we even begin with how he feels and how the family feels? He and they have been let down on every single level. And her father was quoted as saying, she had dreams and hopes that were larger than life. The best quality about her is that she had a really big heart. This is never going to be right with me, no matter how many years this goes on. He said, we're just doing the best we can to go through the stages of the mourning process. There's no timeline. You can put on anything. You just have to live one day at a time. And we're going to do that to honor Lauren. And I'm going to do my best to stand up for her and to do what she would do if she saw this happen with somebody else. Lauren's father also very understandably said that the criminal justice system in Nashville failed his daughter and their family. I mean, without a shadow of a doubt, they have been failed on every single level. And he believes that her death could have been prevented, as I do. He realizes that those legal missteps in Nashville likely led to her murder. Her father also spoke to the news and said this. He said, this happens all over the world, as in talking about domestic violence. He said, unfortunately, no one wants to talk about it. He said, if you're just sitting there thinking there's something you can do, don't think about something you can do. Go do it. If you're thinking, maybe I should take her and bring her home for a week or two, go do it. Don't just think about it. Well, maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. If you think about it, go do it. Because if you think about it, you're probably doing the right thing doing it. Now, currently, there is actually a GoFundMe page that's been set up by the family, and it reads, Lauren Johansson was an amazing young woman. She was going to become an RN next year and then become a nurse practitioner. She was smart, kind, loving, and would do anything to help animals, her family, or anyone who needed her help. Everyone she ever met loved her immediately, and she brought a smile to everyone's face. She was the mother to her brothers, Kyla, Christian, and sister Caitlin, and her own mother. Lauren was a victim of battered woman syndrome and was brutally beaten to death by her psychopath abuser. She was a regular volunteer at multiple animal shelters and rescued many animals. She even took her dog Bentley Joe and cat Marley everywhere she went. She would have brought her rescue horse Coco with her if it had fit in her Jeep. Lauren cared for her siblings, who were both premature and have many disabilities. When her mom, who is an RN, couldn't work or take care of them anymore, Lauren helped me to care for them. She was kidnapped and badly beaten and almost died in December. Her abuser, Bryson Rivers, was put in jail. I told the court, the DA and the judge, he would kill her if they let him out. Bryson told others he was going to kill her too. A high bond of $250,000 was placed, restraining orders filed if he escaped. Lauren and I were supposed to be notified of any court proceedings or if he was released for any reason. The felony conviction for this crime may have been a life sentence, and trial was supposed to be in the next 2 months. After 7 months in jail, a judge, Cheryl Blackburn in Nashville, reduced bail to $150,000, and his mom paid $15,000 to bail him out. The jail released him after hours without the court-ordered ankle monitor. He was let loose onto the street. He was set free last Friday, June the 28th. Early Tuesday morning, Caitlin found the front door open and Bentley, Joe Marley and three shelter cats were in the front yard, and Lauren was gone. A security camera ripped off the house. Her Live 360 was cut off at 4:01 a.m. We reported her missing to police two separate times, and I called and talked to anyone and everyone who would listen and help me find her. The next day, we found a car and Bryson ran from the car as the police arrived. In the back of the car was Lauren. She was brutally beaten to death. He made her suffer and beat her until her eyes were swollen shut. Her head was caved in where he beat her with a pistol like he did before. She was mutilated. When Lauren almost died last time, she told me the following. If he gets out and kills me, please find a way to take care of Bentley, Joe, Marley, Coco, Mercy, Christian, Caitlin, Kyler and Mum. Please, for the love of God, help us fulfill Lauren's final wishes. So they've got this GoFundMe where they're trying to raise as much money as possible to create a legacy for her. But the horror that you hear in that statement, just the hopelessness and helplessness that one feels when you can see these horrific situations playing out in front of you and you try your best to change the outcome and the outcome still arrives in the most heinous way that in this case it arrived. Now, I would say there is some issues online at the moment because I think there is always misinformation there. And like I said, when it comes down to Lauren, I think there are a minor amount of people who are trying to suggest that somehow she caused this. There are some rumors out there about her behavior, and I just want to say it's disgusting. Lauren did nothing wrong. She is a victim. Lauren could have done anything she wanted with her life and should have been able to, and no actions of hers led to anyone having a right to raise their hand towards her. And there are some social media posts that I would say dispute what her father said regarding posting bail. So Bryson's mum said that she didn't post bail for him, but like I've noted in that GoFundMe, it suggests that actually she did post bail. I cannot clarify whether that's true or otherwise. There are also some posts going around on social media that apparently involve Chelsea Rivers, Bryson Rivers' mother, who's feeling very angry about people posting on Bryson's personal Facebook page and allegedly is defending her son and saying that he's responsible for his actions, but also is suggesting that Lauren, to some degree, brought him down and people aren't seeing it from their point of view. But again, even though I think it's reprehensible to ever victim blame, I also see that we create narcissists often by denying that they have any responsibility or accountability for their actions. And you can always find somebody to blame. But if you want to try to project blame onto an innocent young girl whose head was caved in by a monster, well, if you're willing to defend that, you really need to check your behavior, no matter who that relationship is towards you regarding them. At the end of the day, Lauren is the only victim in this story. It doesn't matter how much you love someone, you can't defend the indefensible. Like I said, I do have sympathy and empathy for Bryson's family. I really do, because it will have turned their world upside down. And they do, to all intents and purposes, seem like a very close group. At least they used to be. But Bryson Rivers didn't care enough about them. You know, it doesn't matter how much you tell your mum you love her on Facebook. It doesn't matter how many social posts you put on about your family. If you are willing to destroy their sense of safety, their sense of security, their foundation of family because of your actions, it's because you're selfish, egotistical, and narcissistic to the highest degree possible. And that's what we're talking about where Bryson Rivers is concerned. Understandably, there are lots of questions in this case. So Nashville judges want answers over Rivers' release on June the 24th in the Davidson County Jail. They want to know what happened leading up to Lauren Johansson's death. And a 6-judge panel's actually scheduled an evidentiary hearing for August 15th, where representatives from Brooks Bail Bonding and On Time Bonding are expected to give testimony. The courts are also asking for receipts, documents, emails, photographic evidence of what these companies knew before Rivers left for Mississippi. So heads are going to roll, hopefully. Each of those companies could basically end up getting suspended, depending on what the panel decides. They are not taking into consideration, apparently, any possible criminal liability, so they're not going to be liable on a criminal level, but it could mean that they lose the licenses. And the order that's been filed by the courts requests that those companies explain what happened with Rivers' release. Because, quote, it appears to the court that certain irregularities may have accompanied the posting of bond and release of the defendant in this matter. So understandably, there's a lot of discussion about why would you actually let someone leave prison and actually go and get their own ankle monitor? That makes no sense. Why would you allow all of these mishaps when you're dealing with a high-level perpetrator? That makes no sense. So I can understand why it may be that they aren't able to continue working in the way that they're working, and that hopefully some condemnation will happen, because there has to be a level of liability. Even if it's not criminal, it has to be on a business level. I mean, it's horrific what's played out. Now, currently, the police are trying to decide where the main crime played out. The sheriff said that the crime crossed jurisdictional lines, with some aspects of the investigation pointing to Hattiesburg and some pointing to Petal, as well as all other things that took place in Harrison County. They've said that it looks like the case is going to be brought back to Forest County. So they're discussing that with the district attorney and thinking that's where they'll have the task force within the investigation. It's complicated because of all the jurisdictions. He also asked for any help. So even though they have quite a strong case, clearly, because I don't think that anyone imagines for one second that Rivers will get away with this, but he basically has said, anybody who thinks that they saw something on the days related to the crime, please give them a call. He said, let us come out and talk to you. Let's see if there's any relevance to the evidence that you can bring forward. And I've actually put the number in the description below. So if anybody does have any information that could help with this case, please do get in contact, because Lauren's family deserve that. Like I said, I haven't got the sentence yet. I'm imagining it will be life without parole. I will put it in the description below when I find out. I may even come back to it and cover this again, but it's horrific, isn't it? A young woman's life cut short. Such a preventable action. And again, as ever, to those of you who are listening, and there will be some of you listening right now, who find yourselves with a relationship where you are treated in ways that are similar to this, please, please listen to what I'm saying. Perpetrators like this do not change. They just get better at manipulating you. They just get better at convincing you that you're the problem, that you need to change, that they wouldn't act the way that they acted if only you learned to be a better person. And they will use that excuse until the moment they steal your breath. I promise you, if there is one thing you can take from this video, if you have somebody who raises their hand towards you, it's get out. I know you love them. I know they can be good. I know you can have great times. It doesn't matter. You have to remember, it's the worst of their actions that counts, not the best in these cases. It's the worst of their potential you have to fear, not the best of their moments. That's why women and men find themselves in scenarios where they are mortally wounded and lose their lives, and no one deserves that. Bryson Rivers, examples that perpetrators come in every way, shape, and form. And the truth is that Lauren Johansson's family now had to live the rest of their lives without her, because she believed that in spite of him acting like a monster, somewhere within him he was a good person. And now she doesn't get to have that future.
That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.